WUGA presents the final Artist in Residence event Saturday, October 25th from 3 to 5 p.m. This month we celebrate the work of Dr. Lawrence Stuck, whose playscapes and public works can be seen at a number of schools and bus stops in and around Athens. Dr. Stuck has been kind enough to join me in the studio to talk about this upcoming event. Dr. Stuck, thanks so much for being here.
It's great to be here.
Can I just get you to tell me a little bit about your background and how you found your way into art?
I started out, I went to Miami University in Ohio, and I was taking some art classes, and I kind of ended up in the library going through the stacks, and I think that's the same as surfing the web now, but I would look at different books, and I kind of got involved with a magazine called Art and Society. And at that point in time, I was really trying to see how art would be a little more involved than just being like in people's houses over mantles. And I think that it was in 69, and I kind of happened onto this idea of doing larger artwork, which people were starting to do back then, like Mary Miss. And so in order to do that, and to make it be sort of like matter to the community, I got reading about adventure playgrounds, and that's really how I got involved with that. And people were generous enough to give me old barns, so we had lots of wood. And my first opportunity was my friend was teaching at the lab school, and I built this playground with the fifth grade delinquents that couldn't sit in class. So we were out there with all these barn boards and our hand tools, and it was kind of, I don't know if I've ever built a better playground.
That's pretty wonderful. It was your first one.
It was.
Now, you used the term a moment ago, adventure playgrounds. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
It's a movement that started in England, and it was after the war when the adults were building the buildings and the kids were out playing in the rubble. And this Lady Ellen Hurtwood just got this idea that kids should just build their own playgrounds. And there wasn't risk management or liability. They just were like glad to be playing, and so they just left them alone, and they built these. And what happens, the older kids helped the little kids, and every time they came back, they made better and better playgrounds. And it's really sort of the roots of my research into creativity.
Yeah. And you took that and ran with it, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. We did some fabulous ones. Like in Dayton, I went up, and the high school kids built for their senior project a playground for the kindergartners. You know, we tore down like a dairy barn, and it was like people look at it now and they're like, how did that ever happen? But the 70s really were significantly different.
Yeah. Now, when did you first become interested in art?
I was in college prep in high school, but I took an art class. And then when I went to college, I was an art major.
Yeah.
And I was really a painting major until I started doing like three-dimensional paintings and paintings you could open up and go around the backside, and they asked me to go down to the sculpture department. They said, you're really not one of us. So that was that.
Do you still paint at all?
I do.
Oh, good.
Right. And I have a number of paintings in the show.
Yeah, that's very good. Our series has often featured artists whose work we see around town. One of your pieces is the Gyroscope House in Southeast Athens Park. Can you talk about that work a little bit?
That's a painted sculpture, actually. And I did that with Leonard Piha. And it is, I do a lot of pieces about to get people thinking about how much we're moving. And so there's a map of Clark County on the floor. Because I've done lots of maps through the years. And I think we teach the kids about like the solar system and the planet, but we never really teach them about the local community. Like they don't teach that map where the landfill is and the highways. And so but to me, that's the kind of map and education that helps make better citizens and voters. So that was kind of the idea of that map. And it's a color wheel that goes around, and on top there's a vertical axis windmill, and it has the population of the planet, 7.6 billion. So that's spinning around on top. We're all spinning around. And then Leonard and I just started painting things we liked on there,
right,
and sayings and things like, ineffable.
When you build something like that, does it go through a design phase, or does it come together as you build it?
It's totally we just start with sketches. You know, I knew I wanted to do something round, and I do a lot of round things, and I do a lot of silo parts. So that's a silo roof, And then I do a lot with compasses and color wheels and clocks. And so all that kind of came together.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are a lot of playgrounds called space stations that incorporate those three things.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's kind of a gathering place. For a while, I was trying to promote these outdoor gathering places at schools. So that's a little one. And then, yeah, Leonard's like fabulous to partner with because we just like bounce off ideas. Mm-hmm. Pretty soon it's sort of, and we don't really always think alike, so that's pretty sweet.
Over the years, you've been in Athens a long time. How many playscapes have you built?
Maybe 60, 70, 80. I did a lot of community-built playgrounds early on,
mm-hmm.
and I started Fowler Drive Elementary. And that's what I was doing in Ohio before I came here.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a kindergarten teacher, and he said, we should do this, you know, because I went to other schools. They're like, we don't do that. And this guy's like, what's his name? But he says, we should do this because he was a builder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was working with kindergartners.
Mm-hmm.
And so we built that. And all of a sudden, all the other schools like, why do they have such a cool playground and we don't? And then each school slowly raised money because it's PTA money.
Mm-hmm.
And then the parents got together and they were all older than me at that point because I guess I was all of 24 by then.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was great because they were builders and they taught me things. And then we all built together and there was questions. They say, oh, we should do that. I remember when they misread the plans in Comer, and the bridge was twice as steep. It was a serpentine arch bridge, so mm-hmm. up and down, up and down. And they were, you know, I was over working on the tower because there's all these crews going on. And I came over, I said, wait a minute, it's so steep. And they looked at us like, oh, it'll be fine. And I was like, it's your kids. So we put a bunch of cleats on it so he wouldn't slide down.
Yeah.
It was like with the dew and all that. And it's fine. I mean, the kids, they're so used to not fitting and trying things. And if it's not challenging, they will make a challenge. I remember we built these playgrounds like at Whit Davis and 4th Street, and we had this tower, and the kids would like climb up the outside of the tower and sit on the top and be like, what are you doing up there? And they're like, this is the best place on the whole playground.
There you go.
And we're like, isn't it dangerous? They look at you like, whatever.
Well, you know, it seems to me that growing up, for me, the playgrounds were the place to experience just a little bit of danger. Just a little bit. And now they're not so much. I mean, you know. Because it's just thinking of a swing set. That was an adrenaline rush as a little bitty kid, you know.
Yeah, the first thing early on, Jay Beckwith, he did a lot of playgrounds out in California, community built.
Mm-hmm.
And in a book, a classic line, he said, if we don't give the kids appropriate challenges when they're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12,
mm-hmm.
and they learn sort of an internal modus of control,
mm-hmm.
that when they turn 16, they're just going to hop in their car and drink a bottle of vodka and drive down the road, and they won't have that kind of internal sense of control if we always control them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, that's really interesting because you do want to make it safe enough, but you can't make it boring.
Right, right. Now, I understand some of the structures that you have built. We just talked a moment ago about the number of them that you've built over the years. Some of them are at risk of being demolished. Why is that?
Well, it's probably about maintenance. And I know I live in an old house and I spend all of my time maintaining it. All of us that do. And there's not always money for maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And the school system, in fact, when I started, they didn't even have any money for playground equipment.
Mm.
It was like considered not part of their purview.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where the PTAs would raise money and build a learning environment.
Right.
And so a lot of it's just maintenance. And then we were using things that weren't, I mean, if it's an old barn, it's only got a certain life.
True.
In it.
I see. Yeah.
And then like the treated wood, and they've changed all the codes.
Yeah.
And the codes like pickets,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's changed. So there's a lot of them that are just outdated in terms of the codes.
I see. Now, aside from the playscapes, what are some of the other works around town that we might see?
Well, we just finished up these two bus shelters. The third one's going up in a couple weeks on Prince, they told me.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that with Leonard Piha again, and it was really fun. We just sat around and made these models and like kind of keep pushing the limit of what a bus shelter looks like.
Yes.
And that's kind of what I did on playgrounds. Like I'd sit around with other people and we'd say, well, we could do this, or we could make an upside down house or mm-hmm. a crooked house or
yeah.
underground house or an underground maze or crooked slide. And each thing, you know, and I used to teach a 3D design a lot, like here at UGA, mm-hmm. and then in my classes at Athens Academy. And that's basically all designers. They take what exists and they think how we could tweak it or how we could just like, it's everything kind of evolves from what exists at right now.
Yeah.
And that's how, you know, and playgrounds have like certain things. There's slides and bridges and towers and tunnels and accessories. And that's true about everything that's designed.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's like our bus shelters. Right now I'm working on roundabout designs.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, because there's more and more roundabouts around America.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's RFPs out for those. And so we've been thinking about a piece that you drive by.
What's an RFP?
A request for proposal.
Okay, got it.
You know, and one of the biggest playgrounds I ever did was on Kiowa Island.
Mm-hmm.
And it was weird because we're always thinking about the kids' experience and, you know, their like 4-foot perspective. And then the committee kind of wanted what it would look like at 30 miles an hour driving by it.
Oh, really?
Right, because it was...
How do you show them that?
And well, I mean, I had to think of like this curb appeal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that it's true like for outdoor installations because mm-hmm. I've been doing... My first installations I did in Georgia were during my getting my master's
mm-hmm.
and I put them around the UGA campus.
Oh, terrific.
And so, yeah, there were... And back then I would just go to the person... like at Adderhold and say, could I put this in your front yard? And they'd say, okay. it was kind of like the Wild West.
Right. And now you have to jump through a lot of hoops and...
Yeah, there's a process.
There's a process.
Yes, we call it.
There's a process. I see.
Right. And like signage or whatever.
Got it.
And I mean, anyway, that's kind of how it's evolved.
Yeah.
So it's kind of similar actually to playgrounds because when we started, we didn't have the term risk management.
Mm-hmm.
That was like a brand new thing, I think. After that lawsuit about the McDonald's coffee spilled, and they're like, uh-oh.
right.
It changed everything.
Well, I mean, we lived in a world where they made and sold lawn darts.
Yeah.
You know?
And back when Bobby used to jump off the top.
That's right.
And it's like, he jumped. It's like, oh.
Yeah, he jumped. Or how about the Superman pajamas that has to have the tag that says the cape doesn't actually allow the wearer to fly it.
Yeah, I don't know. And a lot of my sculptures have been about population.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of, I was doing them back at UGA and then I was at the Academy and just around like Piedmont Park. And
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people don't, I mean, we all know there's about 7.7 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask people, they don't realize like back when I was born, there was 2.5 billion. You know, I'd always tell these kids, I'm not very old. They look at me like, no, you're really old.
Yeah, no.
But it's only been 50 years.
Right.
60, 70 years. And so the numbers, and they don't talk about this much because it's, I was reading about why people don't talk about this much mm-hmm. in politics because it's a non-starter because they don't really have an answer for it.
Yeah.
And it's not like we can say, well, if you weren't here. Like, I live in Oconee County, and mm-hmm. and the old-timers said, if you weren't here, it'd be less crowded. You know, but that's the truth, right?
It is the truth.
And we wanted to bring up the drawbridge, but you got in, so.
Yeah, well, it's too late.
And so it keeps, and it happens, and there's just, mm-hmm. and it's numbers, and also people didn't consume as much back in the 50s, mm-hmm. 60s. You know, you had one TV, we had one car growing up. It's like, and now we have, like, all these things.
Yeah.
Right? And it's mm-hmm. not just us, and we're, like, 4.7% of the planet. So America is like a small part of this planet
right.
consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to add all those other people. And we would like them to have refrigerators and whatever. So pretty soon we have this kind of like perfect storm.
Is this the driving force behind why so many of your work takes up environmental issues?
Oh, yeah, totally. It's all connected in terms of, well, I came down here because of the Institute of Ecology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always kind of been involved in that. And so there's, I started a group called E-Cubed. And what happens is people worry about like environmental issues or they worry about economic issues or they worry about equity issues or energy issues. And it's really hard to worry about all four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get kind of focused on the people or on the economy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start like trying to factor all those things at the same time,
mm-hmm.
it's that's why people don't do it usually, because you can't get there from here. But that's what we have to do.
Yeah. What are we going to see in your works that reflect your and your concern and your point of view on the environment and the population that we just discussed?
Well, the piece I'm working on right now is an installation, hopefully at UGA, and it's called The Great Acceleration. And it's a timeline from 1950 to 2050,
mm-hmm.
and you walk through it on a bridge. And it's kind of similar to one I did on Awareness Bridge at Athens Academy about different issues,
mm-hmm.
and there's graphs all the way down it. There's a population line, obviously, that's the base, mm-hmm. you know, from 2.5 billion to, well, 20. There's a lot of projections where we're going to be.
Okay.
And it talks about all the different environmental and social, there's graphs, they call them hockey stick graphs.
Okay, yeah.
You know, consumption and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is all these people are researching here on campus on all these different fields, and we've learned a lot in the last 70 years, and it's how we can extrapolate out and change our ways for the next 30 years to be successful and sustainable and leave the place a better, you know.
Leaves it better than we found it.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's
the
why
plan.
Not?
Yeah. I'd like to circle back to our good friend Leonard Piha. We've mentioned him a couple of times in the interview. As you may recall, Leonard was one of our previous artists in residence. How did you two begin to collaborate?
Well, ironically, he's taken a lot of my old playgrounds and built like shops and studios around his yard.
Oh, okay.
So he'll say, oh, this came from Whit Davis.
Yeah.
And I would do that a lot with Warren McPherson. We would take down old playgrounds when they took them down, and we'd take them to Montessori. We'd flip all the boards over, and he'd have
fresh wood.
Yeah, and really, and so he does, he's got, and I wish we'd stamped them all, like this came from Gaines, this came from Fowler, this came from Whit Davis.
Yeah, that would have been interesting, yes.
Because, and there's really been Leonard, and so that's kind of a backstory, but we both are retired art teachers,
mm-hmm.
and we met up back, I guess I was working out in Oglethorpe County when he was out there when I first met him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was at Barnett Scholes after I was at Barnett Scholes. And yeah, we just sort of like connected in terms of like he likes to do more figurative things, mm-hmm. but I do more abstract things. But it's a good synthesis, I think. And sometimes doing, it's hard doing public art by yourself sometimes, I think.
Yeah.
And I'm so used to collaborating with volunteers and mm-hmm. like I would build cities with kids and I'd build playgrounds with kids. And
right.
I just like working with other people. Like the big playground in Watkinsville was built by volunteers back 25 years ago. So it's been nice. And his whole sense, I'm a lot more about the project sometimes and he's a lot more about the people.
Yeah.
Like every place we go, we're working out there at East Athens Park. All these kids would walk by and say, oh, Mr. Pia. And he would remember all their names. He's like, hi, Shalandra, how's your mom? And is your sister? I'm like, how do you know these people? He's like, oh, I taught them. And I'm like, Leonard, I taught a lot of people, but I don't know them all. And so it's just he has a sensitivity to people.
Yeah.
That is just amazing to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so
that's terrific. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the event coming up. At your house, the Artist in Residence event, can you talk about your unusual home and what we will see when we get there?
It's the original Baptist church in Watkinsville, and they moved to larger quarters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a residence on and off since 72 or 3.
Mm-hmm. How old was the church
It was built in 2009.
Okay.
And they built the Sunday school rooms, which is
1909, not 2009.
Yeah, 1909.
Yeah.
The Sunday school rooms were built in 59 thereabouts.
Yeah.
And that's where I live in the Sunday school rooms.
Mm-hmm.
Like the doors have numbers on them.
They're, still.
Yeah, right. And so, and then I just keep renovating the sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a lot of different events through the years. And now I'm just setting it up. And it's kind of been it's almost like a retrospective because I don't always sell much work, so I have all my work.
Yeah.
Like Pat says, how do you have all this work? I'm like, there you go. So anyway, and it's been kind of fun because I have all these different sort of like proposals,
mm-hmm.
and then I have models, like the bus shelters are there, and then I have some remnants of installations I did about population, I've tried a lot of strategies to get people's attention about consumption and population, and they really haven't worked, but I keep, why not?
Yeah.
Like this new one, Awareness Bridge. And then it's just, so it's all sort of set up. I borrowed some pedestals from OCAF, which is really a great organization. And
you know, I overlooked something very important. OCAF is such a big part of this community. You were one of the original founders of OCAF, were you not?
I was.
How did that come together, if you don't mind my asking? And by the way, thanks for doing that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, well, it's like a lot of things, like with revisionist history, there's who knows the real truth, but we were getting...
Well, I guess now's the time to set the record straight.
Yeah, I know.
Or you could make up whatever you like.
But we, early on, we were just thinking we should have like an arts organization. Mm-hmm. And I'd got an arts organization in Athens, the 597 East Broad, and it kind of went away, which is where the newspaper built their building. But so then I was out in Oconee County by then, and I was like, oh, we should do this here. And there was the old schools, and I was doing all my research on schools design and construction. So I was like, these are good buildings, and they're right downtown. And they'd kind of been abandoned, so I wanted to see if we could lease those. And so the other key people were like, oh, we should do this. And I think that what happens is there's so many artists that live around here, and then they get out of grad school, and they're kind of like would like that interaction like I have with Leonard and Larry Millard. I mean, there's some key artists in town that have really helped me, like Bob Clements. Like they were both on my committees, like in graduate school. And they've really like, you should do this, you know, because sometimes doing artwork that's not like in an art context, you start to think you're not an artist. And it's, you know, if you're in a museum and you do an installation, it's like, that's art. And if you do an installation at a grade school, they're like, that's not art. But so I've been dealing with that whole form and function and art, not art, and for all these years, you know. And so they both were like, no, this is important work, okay, even though if you're not getting in the museum.
Right.
So anyway, that's a backstory. So we're all getting older, and we need to have a place where we can get together and talk about this and support each other and show our work. So that's kind of the background for it. You know, people like Jerry Chappelle were here. And I was actually, I was the youngest by far of everybody there. So, because it's been, I don't know how many years ago now, 92. It's about when I moved into the sanctuary.
How about that?
So I bought that in 92, and I was in town. So we'd have meetings there and talk about, you know, and then we had great people at the school board. They were like Deborah Harden, and she's like, oh, you should do this, you know. And that was really important, too, that they came together like Amory Harden and supported the arts. And it's the scale is fabulous. Versus Athens, we kind of kept running into, well, you know, bigger organizations have bigger things to go up against. And so Watkinsville back then was just like the frontier again. So we were like, let's do this.
Made things a little easier.
Oh, it was, and that's really been a lot of my research on scale, because like small schools are that, they have that sense of, you're more about the people than about the system.
Than the process and the system.
Once you get a system going, there's like, well, there's filters and committees and...
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
I've been speaking to sculptor, painter, and playscape creator Dr. Lawrence Stuck, WUGA's final featured artist in residence. Dr. Stuck, thank you so much for being here. And thank you for agreeing to be our artist in residence.
I look forward to it.
The event at his home will take place Saturday, October 26th in Watkinsville. For more information or to RSVP, you can contact Kathy Bradbury at WUGA@UGA.edu or 706-542-WUGA. That's 706-542-9842. For WUGA, I'm Michael Carton.